flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up, Atlanta. This is the Morning Shift.
Still going with that.
Yeah.
Even though it's in the intro.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm not.
Actually, I thought that was the right cadence.
That intro is, it's so new that I didn't. I was like, what do I do? It's already there. Do I go back to good morning? I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even think I'm supposed to be the one talking first.
I'm just
but
here.
I mean, you know, I will be. I'm okay with that. I love to talk. I mean, you know, I tell my truth on here, Twitter.
Yeah,
a lot
at Twin Peaks.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to everybody that came in Twin Peaks. Not Dylan, but Jersey Mike.
I told
my boy
you not
Tinker.
To back that man into a corner like that.
Well,
Dylan didn't want to go to Twin Peaks hang out with
very,
you last night.
Dylan was apparently very busy last night.
It was like 15 degrees. He's good, man.
He didn't
don't
decide,
back that
he
man.
Didn't decide to text our show text, so we all should have been in bed already, like 10 o'clock at night. So thanks for that, Dylan. It feels like it's been forever. It's been 3 days since we've talked into microphones, and I've done multiple shows on Twitter since then.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's been an action-packed 3 days since we've been able to talk. And I had multiple people hit me up yesterday and be like, hey, man, no show today? Guy's not doing a show? Because obviously there was a ton of topics to kind of cover. But no, we did not do a show yesterday. And look, before we go any further, yesterday was MLK Day. I think it's important to kind of keep that into perspective along with the national championship game last night. So it was, man. I had a great weekend, traveled home to Pensacola, hung out with some family, got to enjoy the three-day weekend and give my wife some time to kind of hang out. And I know that you obviously were hanging out with some listeners last night. And it was a good sports weekend.
Yeah,
it really was.
I think it was
a good old-fashioned sports weekend, man.
I think you're wrong. I think it was a great sports weekend. Got some good games. Got a lot to dive into there. I will say this. My neighbor told me Thursday night when we were having dinner, he said, hey, if you're going to hit a golf ball before February, you probably need to do it Friday, tomorrow. And I said, all right.
I'm trying to think what Thursday was. Was that the 18th? No. 17th?
I don't
know. Like that?
And
yeah,
so,
you had 2 weeks?
So my other neighbor, Carter, hit us up and was like, hey, you got a tee time, 9 holes. And I said, no, I'm not going to play. And then I got an email that
this
I had been.
Thursday?
Yeah, no, Friday.
Okay.
And I got an email saying I had been added to a tee time.
There you go.
Like an hour, in an hour.
Hey, no excuses. Play like a champion.
So I jumped out there and played 9, and boy, it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. And then all of a sudden, it got cold, and it kind of felt like, hey, it's a great day to great weekend to sit inside and watch the NFL games.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's crazy, dude? I left Pensacola. My parents live in like near Perdido Key. We obviously had our winter weather last week. We're expecting more over the next couple of days. Please be safe out on the roads today and look out for any kind of frozen conditions. I know the actual snowfall, rainfall, whatever it is, won't happen until later today. But when you look at when I was down in Pensacola and Perdido, they're actually expecting like 3 to 5 inches. Like they're expecting some of the first snowfall they've had in like 30 years.
Yeah, it looks
down in Florida.
It looks wild because, you know, I keep seeing meteorologists in the city, you know, like the Ella Dorseys of the world on Twitter, and they're putting out these models. And then I get on my weather app and it's no snow, but it says, oh, we're gonna have this and that. I don't know. It's kind of weird to look at and see it all south of the city. Normally,
right,
it's complete opposite.
Yeah.
But I'm fine with whatever happens. I'll just throw it in four-wheel drive. I'm driving in the morning no matter what.
Yeah, and like I said, hopefully people are staying safe out there. And you're about to learn this coming up when, you know, after Porkchop gets here, that when the school's canceled, that the daycares follow suit, that the daycares are like, hey, we noticed that Fulton, Cobb, like, we noticed they were canceling, so we're also canceling. And then, you know, you just for, you know, you better hope that, you know, the work thing irons out for one of the two parents so that somebody can stay home with the kid because there's no daycare. Either that or you lean on a grandparent, maybe over there in Paulding County. So it is what it is.
No, I'll probably lean on the one in Kennesaw at the moment. It might be a little bit easier. You ready for some headlines, Dallon?
This segment is brought to you by Padley. Sell your home for cash fast. Padly buys.com. All right, we are rolling along here on the morning shift. And, of course, you all probably saw this news. The Atlanta Falcons have announced that Jeff Ulbrich is their next defensive coordinator. And this little blurb comes from Tori McElhaney of AtlantaFalcons.com. Ulbrich returns to Atlanta after four seasons with the New York Jets. He spent the first three seasons as the team's defensive coordinator and began the 2024 campaign in the same role.
It's interesting. And look, we're going to continue to react on this throughout the show. I don't have to go in too much of a dialogue here, but it's the vanilla ice cream. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think I'm neither excited nor depressed about it. It just is. And I maybe that has, and you guys can answer this, maybe that has a lot to do with the fact that I'm still waiting on personnel moves. Maybe it's the fact that we don't really know what a Jeff Ulbrich defense is. Like, he's kind of always, you know, been under somebody else's defense and called plays under somebody else's defense. I don't know. Like, when I saw it, I was like, okay. Like, maybe would have loved to see them go outside that umbrella, but having been a coach in the past and you guys have been around him, a lot of times it's like, if I'm going to get fired, I'm gonna get fired doing things my way with my people. And maybe that's the thought process throughout this hiring deal. I don't know.
I don't even think it's the my people as much as a guy that has similar philosophies as me. And not just the on-the-field stuff, but the off-the-field, the way they coach his players, what he brings. I think Ulbrich's a hell of a coach. He developed linebackers when he was here or the first time around. He's had one of the best passing defenses under his helm the last three seasons. I can tell you that. I mean, they've been third, second, and fourth against the pass in 22, 23, and 24. I kind of take away 21 because, well, the whole team was garbage in 21. I mean, they were terrible everywhere in New York in 21. But 22, less than 20 points a game. 23, just over 20 points a game. So he's had defenses that they're top 15 in sacks every year. So under his helm, they've been good. Now, you can have whoever you want call on defense.
I'm going to jump in because that was going to be my point, which said the Jets defense wasn't bad. But what Mike is saying is basically saying Robert Saleh is over the defense. Is that what you're getting at? Because you're saying he never has truly ran his own.
I'm not saying Robert Saleh is over the defense, but when you look at Robert Saleh's pass, when he's in San Francisco for, what, 3 or 4 years, it's, hey, we're going to let our four up front eat. We're going to let them go to work. We're going to run, you know, disguise our coverage in the back end, run, you know, quarters or whatever else you want to run in the back end. And I think that's very much the mentality they took. The problem is, look at the guys they had in San Francisco on the front four. Look at the guys they had in New York in the front four. We don't have those guys. And anytime you've been Jeff Ulbrich, it seems like you've been – near a Robert Saleh who kind of runs their own deal. So, and that's not to take anything away from Jeff Ulbrich. I think he has just as much to do with the success or lack of success up in New York. That's not a knock on him. That's just simply to say that I don't know what his defense will look like when he pairs back up with Raheem. I have what do we even think that looks like? It's not like he's blitz heavy. We have to be blitz heavy. We don't have edge rushers up front or guys from the middle of the defense to be able to actually get home. So, If you're saying that Jeff Ulbrich's defense as he rushes forward and disguises coverage as well, okay, well, that's probably not going to work very well here.
I think you are taking away from, like you're saying you're not taking credit away from him for the defense, but in the same breath, you are.
No, I don't know. I don't know where you're getting that from. I'm not, like I said, I'm neither ecstatic about it nor sad about it. It just is. Like He gets credit for developing the players and coaching guys up and being around some of the players, but schematically, I don't think there's any guarantee that schematically he's going to do the same things here that were happening in New York. We don't know.
I think the clarification is that there's no questioning that Ulbrich was a DC. He called plays. He was the guy, the defensive play caller. But I think what you're trying to what I'm hearing is you say that's fine. I give him that credit, but he did it under a scheme that is what Robert Saleh wants to run. And I think what he'll do here is run a scheme that Raheem Morris as far as your philosophy as overreaching. Your broad philosophy is what Raheem wants to run, but Ulbrich's going to be the one calling the plays and putting the game plan together, but it's going to be within a system that Raheem Morris wants to run.
And that's exactly what I'm saying, is that like we can sit there and look at what Jeff Ulbrich's track record is and say, well, he's good. And look, I think there's a lot to be said about the fact that he's coached some top five, top 10 defense. We covered it last week. Atlanta Falcons, top five, top 10 defense. I don't think they've had top five defense in 40-plus years, and they've had three top 10 in the last 40 years. So it's like I look at it and go, oh, well, Jeff Ulbrich's coached some good groups. I don't know how much of that to give to him. And then at the same time, the ones that have been bad under his tutelage or haven't been very good, I don't know if those are his fault either. We don't really know what exactly he is schematically as a defensive guy. Hopefully, he's a guy who brings a lot of different looks to the table and adapt to personnel. And so we're going to find out a lot later once we know who the personnel is.
Well, plenty of time to, yes, a lot later to come back to this story for the Atlanta Falcons. All right, Ohio State wins its first national championship in a decade, 34-23, with that win over Notre Dame. So this one started off fun to watch, and then you had Ohio State step on the gas and do what their offense has been doing throughout the college football playoffs. And they showed up big time.
Yeah, as it turns out, Texas gave them their best battle, which was in the semifinal. That's as bad as Notre Dame's defense has looked to me all season. I just thought they had no answers at times for what Ohio State wanted to do, and Ohio State kind of scored at will. What they scored a 28 unanswered. I think it was like
first four possessions.
Yeah, and then the first five possessions they had 31 points in it because. Notre Dame ended up finally going down and scoring. They couldn't mount much. The first drive made it seem like it was going to be one way and offensively, but it kind of seems that they used everything up in that first drive.
Yeah, and I thought it was important to start hot. I think that was definitely part of the blueprint when you drive down the field. Riley Leonard, you know, 8 carries on that first drive, 4th down conversions, all the above. But you knew that was not sustainable. And at the same time, you kind of went as Riley Leonard did offensively because you needed the plus one. Ohio State, on the other hand, it was like, dude, we can stress you in 5 different ways. Like, we can run Will Howard. We can run one of our 2 stud running backs or throw it out to our wide receivers. Like, we can do a million different things. So, I do. And look, credit to Notre Dame. They scratched and clawed and stayed in that game until the end. But in the end, the best team probably in the country all season, won the game. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, all the criticism lobbed Ryan Day's way this year, and he's able to end it coming out on top with a really good team that he helped to put together. When we come back here on the morning shift, let's get back to Jeff Ulbrich as the Falcons' new DC. What to expect? That's when we return here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the morning shift with the news of the day, and that is that the Atlanta Falcons have hired Jeff Ulbrich as their next defensive coordinator. Of course, we know him from his previous stint here in Atlanta when he was with the Dan Quinn staff and with Coach Raheem Morris. So, and that's when Ulbrich coached linebackers for the team. But most recently, he was the interim head coach for the New York Jets. He spent 3 seasons as the team's defensive coordinator and began the same role in 2024 until the Jets parted ways with Robert Saleh. So now he is here back in Atlanta.
Yeah, and just to, you know, continue the conversations we were having a minute ago, I just don't think we know. It seems to me like schematically you're probably going to be utilizing some of the same things you did last year. But again, a lot of this comes down to what personnel you're going to bring in. I know that there's a number of there's a couple of corners names floating out around there. I've seen it a couple sources now. And I think you look and you probably have to draft defensive line at some point, and you have to get more of an interior rush. Maybe there's somebody on the open market that you can grab there. But I don't think I don't think by hiring Jeff Ulbrich, you say, well, they're going to do this. This is the route they're going to go. You know, they're going to run, cover 2 nickel or, you know, Tampa 2 or whatever, you know, whatever you think they might run. We don't know. I mean, we just simply don't know. And, maybe you go back to the pairing, that you had back in 2020 when there was an interim situation going on. But, the personnel's changed. The people have changed and everything else. And, I'll look forward to personnel-wise what they do and also, who's hired to be that defensive line coach.
Yeah, well, you got to develop some guys, including Braylon Trice, who will be coming off of he's coming off ACL. He's a guy that is kind of like an extra – it sounds weird, but it's kind of like an extra draft pick because you haven't even seen what he can do other than a half, not even a full half in a preseason game. Can you continue the development of Rukarororo or Brandon Dorlus, who we didn't really see at all this year? What is Zach Harrison's future has with that? Is Grady Jarrett even going to be here next year?
But before you get ahead with the development stuff, you already pointed that out earlier, right? That Ulbrich has a track record for doing that.
He did, yeah, with linebackers. He was phenomenal, Tiff, when he was here. I think you guys, I know you do, but I think most of our listeners and the fans of this team should remember that that 2016 draft was one that you got Keanu Neal in the first round. And then you turned around and you got Deion Jones in the second round. And I think Devondre Campbell was the third or the fourth round. And so two of those guys, and Debo and Devondre, they were vital parts of the defense that ended up getting better as the year went on. And then it turned into that 2017 defense, which was top 10.
Really good, yeah.
And Ulbrich should get a lot of the credit for developing those guys. I don't care, and that's not what Mike was saying, but I don't care whose system it was under. He was the one developing those linebackers, and Devondre was a fourth-round guy, and he did a good job at it. There's no mistaking he'll be running what a philosophy that Raheem and him have settled on, and it's probably going to be Raheem's philosophy, but the calling the play part will be Ulbrich. So when in a game, he's going to be responsible for that. I like the thought of having a Wink Martindale or a Steve Wilks, because those were guys that you kind of knew what they wanted to do. And I thought, personally, it was Wink Martindale for me because he reminded me a lot of Dean Pease, a guy that can kind of take, you know, your ingredients and get the most out of them. And I think that's probably what is bothering you, Mike.
Yeah.
And when I heard, I was, as you well know, Tiffany, I will go to the Twitterverse and have the conversation. And I had one Saturday night with a lot of people.
I think I saw that. Did I got lumped into something that I didn't want to be?
Yeah, somebody said, I guess you're the only one person that tells the truth on this show or something. Or, of course, I don't, apparently, to this person who was
That's
very into his feelings.
I was like, I don't know what's happening.
But I kept hearing the word, this is comfortable. Or this is just because he knows the building. And first off, he doesn't know the building. He might know where the meeting room is, but the people in the building have changed. I mean, the players are different. The everyday staff, except for maybe 4 to 7 people, has completely turned over. And some of those are freaking digital website people like Austin Hiddle, who just takes – I don't want to degrade what he does, but he's essentially the team cameraman and runs all their digital.
He's
phenomenal at it. It's so – So he might know Austin. That's great. He might know David Bassey, who runs their PR, but everything else is different other than maybe Raheem. The coaching staff is different.
Not, can we just stop with all that?
It's just a negative
talk. Comfortable or the vanilla talk, because if this were any job, you're going to go with who you're comfortable with, right? That's my take on it. If you're going to hire a guy that you know and know that does have a proven track record. So that's the important part that comes with it. The defense was good with the Jets. As you pointed out, the time here with the Falcons was good. So you're not just hiring someone that you know that doesn't have a track record. You're hiring someone that you know that does. So everyone can miss me with all the comfortable and vanilla stuff. I'm going to say, wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm gonna keep going.
Way to go away from vanilla.
How many splash hires don't always equate to success just because it's a big name or something?
No, well, here's the thing. Let's rewind to where we were two off seasons ago. All right, you needed a new defensive coordinator. You went down to New Orleans. You hired Ryan Nielsen, who had a track record with different guys of making sure you could get to the quarterback. Right,
but never had called plays.
But had a track record in the front seven of knowing you could get home.
Yeah.
Right? And what did he do? He was able to utilize the skill set of Caden Ellis, David Onyemata, and a number of different guys up front to make the numbers better. All right, now, in the end, you had to do it schematically to get home.
Mm-hmm.
You had to. And I give Arthur Smith credit. He didn't, you know, he went outside the box and said, this guy has a track record being able to get it done. This is one of the things I want to see our defense do. Let's move on from there. I thought Ryan Nielsen was a good defensive coordinator. I don't feel that way looking at this one. I don't, like, we're still.
You
like,
don't feel he's a good DC, or you don't feel.
I what's the biggest problem facing our defense right now? We need to be able to get home.
It's the same thing we've had for the last 20 years.
Jeff Ulbrich's pass as a defensive coordinator says, let's rush four. Let's disguise coverage. It just is what it is. So I'm not, listen, I'm not, vanilla is not always a bad thing. It's still ice cream, right? Vanilla, it just is what it is.
Like,
it's expected.
Chocolate syrup all over my
I know you do. I know you do. And that would have been the, you know, for me, that would have been the Steve Wilkes conversation or whatever else it is. It's not a bad hire. That's not the angle I'm coming from. But it also seems like it just kind of fits into the ho-hum version of like, well, let's see what happens. I don't think anybody knows right now if it's a good hire.
Can we just say the obvious part out loud, which everyone is just forgetting, and I think you're trying to say it, but just say it. It doesn't, and that was kind of where I was getting at with some of the guys, is it doesn't matter who was here. You have to get better up front. You have to address it in the draft.
Right.
And so I think one of the reasons why I look at the development is that's going to be asked of him this year, whether it's him or whoever they decide to bring in as a defensive line coach. You're going to have to develop. I had someone that I worked with during football season. They gave me a shout Sunday, and we're like, well, do you think – The staff defensively is going to flip over? And I said, I don't think so. I think that was probably one of the conversations that he had, is that, hey, can you work with this guy? Can you work with that guy? Who would you see coming in and running the, you know, being your defensive line guy? Is there a guy that you think is better at like all of those things? And also, we don't know that if the job wasn't offered to Steve Wilkes or Wink Martindale, and maybe they said, no, if this is what the parameters are, I don't want to do it. There's a really good chance this isn't your first offer. I'm not saying I know that. No one's told me that, but you could have offered it to somebody else and been turned down. You don't know. I just think that when we say comfortable, I think Tiff made a good point. Look at all walks of life. You know, if you're going to bring in people that you know do things a certain way and the way you want it done, that's everywhere. That's not just this sports. Every coach does it. We see world leaders do it. We see whatever. Like guys, if you're put up as the CEO of a company, the first thing you do is go hire a right-hand person that you can trust, because you want people in there that you can trust.
And that can do the job. That's the biggest. The biggest thing, right?
Trust to do the job.
You know, people hire friends. Things don't work out. That whole kind of thing. But you hire someone that you trust can do the job, and that also the bonus of it is that you know them. That you know they can.
Yeah. I look, I understand that. But you know, we've had this conversation before on here about hiring. Hiring the interim guy, hiring a coach from that's been on staff when the head coach gets fired. I'm not a believer in that. Like, I believe that sometimes you need to shake things up. You need a different perspective. You need other opinions to be able to come into the building. A lot of times when you hire an interim guy after a head coach gets fired, you get a lot of the same stuff. A lot of the same departure times, development, you know, practice time, like all the other stuff. And sometimes I just feel like sometimes you have to shake it up. Again, I keep going back, and it sounds like I'm against it as opposed to y'all. It sounds like you're very much in favor of Jeff Ulbrich, right? But I'm just simply saying we don't know. And I guess I'm taking Tiff's wait-and-see approach. It's going to depend on who the defensive line coach is and who the personnel is brought in. Because to me, if you go back to the well with Jeff Ulbrich as the DC and you run about the same personnel, which they're not going to, then that would be a mistake.
That's the thing is I'm really not for it or against it. I'm neutral to the fact that it wasn't my first pick, but I also see the coach that Ulbrich has been in my time around him, and I see when he went to New York, they got better in sacks, they got better in points per game allowed, they got better against the pass. So I see the things he's done, but the reality is when people say comfortable, this is a bunch of the old. Well, he hasn't been here in 5 years. The roster, other than A.J. Terrell and Grady Jarrett on defense, is completely different. So these players have never been around him. They've never been coached by him. I don't think that means it's comfortable for me, for those guys, the guys that are that actually have to make. We might be because of us because we know him, but not those guys. That's my point about the comfortable thing. I think is overplayed and lazy.
You know me, I'm always neutral. Hey, you may not be, though. You can call us at the top of the hour to let us know your thoughts on the hiring of Jeff Ulbrich as the Falcons' offensive coordinator, 404-726-0929. Go ahead and get your place on the line. We'll take your call at the top of the hour. But up next, Ohio State wins their first national championship in more than a decade. We'll have more on the Buckeyes' big win over Notre Dame next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Toughest season climb in the history of the sport, and after all that, it's Ohio State together at the mountaintop, champions of college football.
Chris Fowler on the call along with Kirk Herbstreit. That game of on ESPN, of course, the National College Football Championship, and Ohio State winning the first 12-team CFP playoff national championship. They beat the Notre Dame. They beat Notre Dame 34-23.
Yeah, and they were also the first team to win a 4-team playoff as well.
Yeah, they were. Beat Bama in the Sugar Bowl that year in 2014.
Yeah, and then beat Oregon in the title game.
And Cardale was there last night as well.
Yeah, well, he don't play school, just football.
No, he doesn't.
I'll always love that because You know why? He was the first person that really openly embraced it. I mean, everybody, I think others did, but he just came out and said, I don't play school. I'm here to play football.
Yeah.
And he did.
He let it eat out there. No, man, you're right. It's he obviously was an incredible talent. I know that it was a star-studded event last night down at Mercedes-Benz. A lot of people in town. You know, I heard that Urban Meyer got the loudest ovation. I was reading that from a number of different people that said the place went nuts when they showed him. But yeah, man, I mean, hats off to Ohio State. They're definitely, we said it all here, they're the most talented team in the country. They had a couple of hiccups, obviously, along the way. You know, I got asked last night, somebody hit me up and goes, you know, if Bama lost to Auburn and still won the Natty, would you still be as excited? And I was like, it literally happened 8 years ago, and I was just as excited as I would have been, you know, otherwise. So I know that Ohio State and Ryan Day, just riding the wave right now, man, as well they should be. They definitely deserve it. Definitely the best team in college football at the end of the day.
Well, the hardest hit that that Will Howard took last night was in the back seat of a golf cart.
I saw that.
Have you? I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
They've got Ryan Day. It's one of those stretch golf carts. So there's like three rows or four rows. And there's a young lady who I do not know. I'm not sure if she's part of the building or the college football playoff, but she's driving the golf. She's driving them to their press conference. And Tiff, you know how this is. They take all these guys down at once at these big games, these championship games, and she is taking a turn, and I think she thinks she's got a turn radius, and she doesn't have it. She absolutely just hammers
like my wife driving my
the
truck.
Wall at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Such, and the way the tires were pointed, she basically broke the golf cart, and it was stuck. And Ryan Day almost went through the windshield.
Yeah. Dude.
The best part is there's the guy filming it. And there's a guy screaming at Ryan Day like, "You blanking deserve this! I'm so proud!" Wham!
He's yelling because Ryan Day is gonna ride off.
Yeah.
Hey, you deserve it.
Yeah, it was.
Ryan Day's like, "Hey, we can talk.
I'll show it to you. I'll show it to you."
It's one of those things where that girl definitely texted her friends afterwards and said, "Oh." Period, my period, God, period. Like, what just happened?
I think I just got fired.
I think I just got fired.
It's
but yeah, I know that Ryan Day had to feel a massive, I don't want to call it sense of relief, but just sense of elation after what was happening and some of the stones he's taken, you know, hurled at him this year. So it is. It's awesome to see. And you love that Ryan Day, it's like not like a comeback story, but it seems like, you know, he's just been to the depths of places after losing that many games in Michigan in a row. But you win the national title, you kind of get that crown, and you'll always be that national championship coach.
But everybody asking the questions we've talked about on our show, you know, will he still be the head coach next year? And the more I even was thinking about it yesterday, but before the game, it's kind of like, just look at his track record. Like, it's just that I know they did not beat Michigan, right? Last four years, whatever it is. It's kind of a dumb question to ask.
It is and it isn't, though. It is. You're right. It is because the guy's got 10 losses He's 70-10 now in his career there, now with a national title. But just go back a month ago, Tiff, and he just lost to Michigan for the fourth straight year. And had it not been a program that doesn't have a precedent of firing successful coaches who either don't win national titles or beat Michigan, is it that crazy of a question?
Yeah. When you phrase it like that, no. But on the outside, looking at the numbers that you just mentioned, why would you not want that person leading your program? I feel like for him, because he's used the quote before, Ohio against the world, and I know a lot of people throw that around, I almost feel like it's not even the comeback thing, rather than it's more of, you know, I showed you guys.
Yeah, you asked Friday, Mike, who's a better coach, Bo, Ryan Day or Marcus Freeman in buy or sell? And when I look at Marcus Freeman, when I just watch him, yeah. What did I say?
Buy or sell?
It's all. Wrong show. when I look at Marcus Freeman, just when they do a pregame cutaway, I just go, man, if I could go back and actually be good at something and I was playing college football, I'd go play for that guy.
Yeah.
He just just watching him interact with his players, I like everything about him. But when you asked me that, I started thinking about it and I go, well, I can't say right now that he's a better coach than Ryan Day. They both took over similar situations. I think Ryan Day's was a little bit worse off at the time just because of the stuff with Urban Meyer. When Brian Kelly left Notre Dame, I thought it was a little better situation, but not much. We're splitting hairs.
The coach stuff I know is what you're talking about, but you can also look at the talent. And so with that being said, does now Notre Dame become even more competitive next year? Everyone got to see their coach. Everyone got to fall in love, you know, with how he coached and how he interacted with his players. That was a big topic everywhere I turn. That he made Notre Dame likable. So are they going to get more money now, which, they have it?
Well,
go get some more players. They'll be back in this mix next year, you think?
The best thing for Notre Dame is, to go back to the Cardale Jones thing, is we're no longer acting like these kids need to play school. They're playing football, and it's pretty much all that matters. And I don't know I know Notre Dame had some good money in NIL. I don't think it was Ohio State money. That's
maybe it is now.
Well, it might be, and it also just helps that we don't live behind the facade that they have to be student athletes like they used to.
Yeah.
I think that helps Notre Dame more than anything because it's not an easy school to get into. It's not an easy school to attend. It is a tough school. As far as, you know, I'm not going to say it's Ivy League, but it is a school of higher learning.
There's no doubt about it. And Tiff, I think your question, can they get more time? I don't think anybody knows. Like, I think it's impossible to kind of forecast what we'll be dealing with in terms of this team next year. Like, from year to year, and how many times we see kids nowadays, hey, love it here, but I had to make a business decision. Remember Miami's head basketball coach that resigned, a month ago? He's like, after we made a Final Four run, had seven guys that wanted to transfer, and they're like, hey, love you. Hey, love it here. Love Miami. Good team, but, you know, I got to make a business decision. So that there will be players that get poached from there. They will probably bring in better talent as well, and you'll be dealing with a situation where you're without Riley Leonard or whoever else, and you'll have to move on from that and try to recapture that magic. And so I think that's the beauty of having Ryan Day, is he has shown the ability to move into this next era of college football when a lot of coaches haven't. And that'll be kind of Marcus Freeman's next task, is to prove that he can rebuild this roster year in and year out and have quality players come back to that program.
Yeah, I that could be the case. But I look at the Marcus Freeman aspect of it. Is he enough? And Bo, you just pointed it out too. You'd want to go play for that guy. Is that enough with a little bit of money to make some star players kind of rethink this whole, maybe the NIL thing?
Yeah, I think that they know that they'll get paid, and whether it's maybe not quite as much as somewhere else. But let's not forget what Riley Leonard is. He is a transfer player that showed out to be a star at Duke, and for what they were, helped them win a lot of games. And he's not the best pocket passer at all. Neither one of these guys were just out of this world pocket passers, but they both could do it. They could do what the college game needs, is a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And So I think if you look at the Riley Leonard model, that might be their model next year for a quarterback. And, yeah, I think people would want to go play for him. They wanted to play for him when he got the job, and there's nothing that shows that. I mean, their best player was Love.
Yeah.
And no doubt people are obviously going to want to go play at Ohio State, because you'd assume now that Ryan Day is going to still be the head coach there. And after he navigated through what could have been a difficult season after that Michigan loss, but the team pushed on.
The story gets to get told now, and it's a great story about a bunch of guys who have just overcome some really tough situations. And there's a point where there's a lot of people that counted us out, and we just kept swinging and kept fighting. It's the reason why you get into coaching, is to see guys overcome things, learn life lessons, and then reach their dreams. This is what happened tonight.
And that was Kirk Herbstreit, right?
That was, oh, stop it. That was Ryan Day. That was, again, courtesy of ESPN. But, you know, I had Ohio State twice. I had them in the Rose Bowl a couple of years back, had a regular season game last year. And in my interaction with Ryan Day, yeah, like he remembers everything. Right, he remembers what's being said about this team, and you heard him bring it up in that. And I believe even in the Rose Bowl interview after the game, I think he kind of alluded to the same thing, because that was another year, of course, where they were calling for his head, and because they only made it to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and he's the one thing I'll give Ryan Day is he's been treated very unfairly at times by the national media because. These expectations that have been put on him. Now, look, it's a top-tier program, so that's what comes with it. But it's felt at times like it was just a little bit unfair with the expectations. And I just can't help but think, but if you did not want Ohio State to be national champion, and I know there's a lot of Michigan fans that are upset. I was talking to James in Twin Peaks. He's a Michigan guy, Michigan fan. Michigan has no one to blame but themselves for the Ohio State national championship, because if they don't do this flag planting stuff, I think it really set Ohio State off. And it probably also set the team off, because they thought they had to play for their coach's job.
I will say, and go back to your first comment, you said that, you know, the national media has been kind of unfair to Ryan Day. I don't see it that way at all. I think most of the people I've listened to in the national media, I know that, you know, Coach Saban went off about it yesterday on game day. Most of the people in the national media are like Ohio State fans. Are a little bit unfair to Ryan Day.
I'm not sure as much as I love Saban, I know he's a part of the media now. He's not, he's still a coach, and he's going to view it the way a coach should, with the way people.
I think that's been that's been the overarching rhetoric around Ryan Day. I haven't seen many national media members go after him. It's been mostly.
The writers been a little bit after him, and I've seen it.
National writers?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that's where that helps push the fan narrative. But,
yeah.
But again, unfair or not, you're put in that position. You're paid $10 million a year to win titles and to beat your rival.
Now he is.
And I was one of the people that said that. I thought if he didn't make the national title game or win it, he could be fired. And I still think that was true.
So you think he's back next year?
Oh, hell yeah.
I think that goes without saying.
The
only way he's not back next year is if he decides not to be back next year.
He just bought himself 5 years.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
You know, and this is another era where he should make the playoff. At Ohio State and Georgia, Notre Dame is starting to pull in that because of where they're at with the conference. Those teams should be playing in the college football playoff every single year.
All right, when we come back here on the morning shift, it will be not the wake-up call, but a time for you to give us a call to give your thoughts on the Falcons hiring Jeff Ulbrich as the defensive coordinator. You know, you can let us know what you think. Bo has a good touch on the fan base on Twitter out there, but hopefully we won't be arguing with anybody when you call in today. 404-726-0929. We'll be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.